time for You Oughta Know, a weekly conversation about all things automotive with your host, Toby Edmonds.
Toby, welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
How you doing?
Oh, fabulous. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty well, too. You sound like you were rested. You had a nice break. You were away someplace. Did the sun shine upon you where you were?
When I chose to go outside, yes.
Ah, okay. But this was a working type of activity. Maybe we should start by asking, okay, what kinds of things do you bring back that have changed your view of the automotive world?
I have to say, this is my first time, and for those of you that don't know, what Mike and I are talking about is I was down in Vegas. I was lucky enough to be able to attend the SEMA and APEX show down in Vegas, and it was
And what do SEMA and APEX stand for?
SEMA and APEX. SEMA is it's an aftermarket automotive show.
Okay.
So it highlights aftermarket, mostly accessories for vehicles. So you see a lot of modified, customized vehicles, that kind of stuff. SEMA is the more public side.
Okay.
It's for, there is an admission fee, but, you know, for the most part, anybody can go and see the SEMA show. But the APEX show is strictly for, it's more of a trade show. And this show is strictly for people who are in the automotive industry. So you have to either be a supplier, a vendor, a shop owner, a technician, something like that. You have to be affiliated with the automotive industry, and you actually have to apply to get in.
Okay. So were there a lot of people at these two shows?
I can't even begin to tell you how many people were at these shows. They were just huge shows. SEMA, of course, was the more popular one. Had the most attention, the most population, as far as vendors, suppliers, participants, attendees. I don't know if you've ever been to the Las Vegas Convention Center, but it is the size of a small city.
Oh, okay.
And they easily filled up the entire Las Vegas Convention area, both inside and out. There was booths everywhere. They brought in everything from people who sell air fresheners all the way up to the big name stars of reality TV shows like Gas Monkey Garage, stuff like that. So I mean, it was truly spectacular. They had three different race courses set up for drifting demonstrations. So you could some of them you could go along for a ride. So you could stand in line, get in a car, and a professional driver would take you around the racetrack and show you how to drift in a car. It was truly something to behold.
So my takeaway from just your description is that the whole business of vehicles is alive and well.
Absolutely. In fact, when I was down there, I went to a trade luncheon. It was for people who belong to the Import Car Association. And we went over statistics of the import market and as well. I mean, we went over the market as a whole, both domestic and imports. Obviously, the focus was on imports and what type of a market share they were going to have in the next 5 to 7 years compared to, from used cars, pre-existing cars, new cars, new car sales, all that stuff. And it was absolutely the automotive market, the automotive repair market, all of it is alive and well and expected to increase significantly over the years.
Now, you and I have talked a lot about the changes that have been occurring in terms of the sophistication of vehicles these days, the electronification of vehicles, and so on. I'm guessing that there was a component that was looking forward to, not just saying this is what is, but dealing with some of those topics of electric vehicles, self-driving vehicle, the rest of that stuff. What was there that you took away from the shows about that?
You know, since this was mainly focused on aftermarket automotive, customization, all that kind of stuff, there wasn't a lot of that type of stuff there, at least not that I saw. And I do say that because, I mean, I was down there for 5 days between these two shows. And even being down there for 5 days, there's absolutely no way I could have seen everything.
Right. Okay.
Just because there was so much. But, you know, that wasn't really the focus of SEMA. Apex had some, because it was more trade affiliated, there was some mention of it, but it was more in the way of classes and education and training, not so much as in products available for it. Because we haven't hit that point yet with the aftermarket market area yet. It's still too new. So we saw a lot of that, but mainly, like I said, in training and education.
Okay. What about the one of my favorite new things is 3D printing. Did you see any 3D printers?
No, I didn't see that either.
Okay, they're coming. They're coming. Maybe next year.
Oh heck yeah! I would give my IT staff at my shop because we do work on a lot of older, weirder stuff that a lot of shops won't work on. So the ability to be able to print my own parts because what I need is obsolete would be absolutely fantastic.
Okay. Now, last week, you were there, and I was here, and we managed to have a conversation with a gentleman who is editor of Car and Driver. And I found that fascinating. Any thoughts about how that went?
I thought it went very well. It was a shame that we lost him when we did.
Well, he had a limited amount of time because being the busy guy, editor-in-chief of a major publication, he had another interview that he was going to be catching into, and that's why we lost him, just to point that out.
Okay.
Yeah. But it would have been nice to have talked to him for double or triple the time.
Absolutely. But, I mean, and I know we talked about it last show, but that issue, the November issue of Car and Driver magazine, if you haven't picked it up yet, I mean, if you have any questions at all, any hesitancies about driverless vehicles, it's a very impressive read. They did a very nice job. They covered a lot of ground. And to talk to him on air about that, well, for the brief amount of time that we did have with him, to talk to him about those articles was very, it was definitely about one of the highlights of my automotive career, let's put it that way.
Okay. Well, thank you. Glad we were able to make that happen. We'll look forward to doing more of them. We're in touch with the people that organize these things. And as we get more topics, we'll possibly bring another person back with another perspective on one or another thing having to do with vehicles. So topics today, now that you're safely back, there's a little bit of snow and ice on the roads, and you drove carefully to work today. Where would you like to go?
Well, I just figured we'd talk mostly about because I kind of figured we'd have some questions about the SEMA show and Apex. But I mean, if you're wanting to talk about the ice, I mean, we did get some. I actually kind of expected to come back to snow. I came back Saturday afternoon, so the snow hadn't quite hit. As I'm sure everybody knows, it hit Saturday night. So yeah, when I woke up on Sunday, I was like, oh, there you are, snow. I thought you were coming. But yeah, no, I didn't venture out a whole bunch yesterday.
Okay. So if you were to think back then to those shows, what was the biggest takeaway, the thing that you brought back to Alaska that informs what you're doing next?
The takeaway that I brought back to Alaska that informs what I'm going to do next is I'm sure everybody is aware of the fact that, you know, I own an import shop, but I am a European automotive specialist. So I work mainly on Volkswagen, Audi, Mercedes, BMW, Volvo, you know, the European imports. However, the thing that I found to be most interesting in that, you know, logically thinking about it makes a lot of sense, but just how much the Asian import market is set to explode over the next 5 to 7 years. They're expecting and predicting that the share of Asian imports is going to increase dramatically. In fact, by 2020, they actually predict that import vehicles will have at least 56% share of the entire market. So, you know, that's something that can't be ignored. That's actually a pretty hefty increase. And I think, you know, this kind of does tie in a lot with what you and I talk about quite a bit with hybrid vehicles, electric vehicles. I think that that has a lot to do with it. And we did actually, I did attend a seminar on hybrids and hybrid batteries and what it takes to diagnose, replace, and even rebuild them. That was something that's kind of new to me, and I felt kind of a little bit left out of the loop on that one, because it was something, you know, we do have our fair share of hybrids up here, but as far as specialists or people who work on just hybrids, the market isn't large enough up here quite yet. So we see the dealer being the one to do most of the work.
And my understanding about hybrids, and particularly the best-selling hybrid, I believe, here as well as many other places, is the Toyota Prius. And I have anecdotal reports that even dealers have seen very few. Admit that may be changing as vehicles age and so on, but very few big battery replacements on Prius hybrids.
Right, and that is one of the things that we talked about is what it shortens or extends the life of a hybrid battery. And because we do live in Alaska, you know, temperature is the biggest threat to a battery.
Okay.
Extreme temperatures, so extreme cold and extreme heat. Because we were down in Vegas, obviously they did focus on extreme heat as being one of the ways to significantly reduce the lifespan of a battery. And then we talked about different types of battery, because when a vehicle is in the regeneration mode for the battery, like when you're going down hills and that battery is recharging, that's when you see the biggest temperature increase in that battery, because it has to work harder in order, because it's charging itself, it's being worked harder.
Right.
And a lot of vehicles will come with ways to cool the battery. Some of the higher end vehicles like Tesla actually have a liquid cooled system that they use to remove the heat from the battery to extend its lifespan. Toyota Priuses use air cooling methods. Some vehicles even use the AC system as a method. They cycle the AC system through the battery compartment to remove the heat from the battery. One thing that I found out that makes a lot of sense that I did not know before is the Nissan Leaf. One of its biggest problems is that the engineers did not account for any method of keeping the battery cool, and that accounted for a lot of the problems that it had initially, because there was absolutely no method available to keep the battery cool, and so they experienced a lot of problems with batteries.
So what you're suggesting, though, is that the Nissan engineers probably over time began to make changes for cooling, and that also, I'm guessing, there has been some further development as experience has been gained. You know, Prius has been out there for a long time. I think they even offer two different kinds of batteries depending upon the year and the model of vehicle you're getting. Do you have any discussion about that evolution of batteries?
You know, they did not talk a whole bunch about the evolution of batteries. Mostly what they talked about was the evolution of the systems that's used for extending the life of the batteries.
Okay.
Because this class was really mainly focused on rebuilding the batteries.
Got it.
There are quite a few shops down in, you know, areas where there's a big hybrid market, but also where the environment is kind of makes battery life kind of difficult to maintain. So obviously Vegas, California, areas like that, there are shops that will, you know, they're hybrid specific shops, but also focus on rebuilding hybrid batteries. And that to me is fascinating because it's just something that I never really, like I said, I never really thought about it because, first of all, we don't really have the market up here for it. But, you know, obviously mainly my most, the most of my experience comes from with automotive batteries anyhow.
Right.
From the one that everybody has. And when they go bad, you just replace them.
Sure.
When you're looking at, you know, $8,000 to $10,000 for a battery, suddenly rebuilding them makes a lot of sense.
No, I would. You spoke about particularly heat affecting longevity of a battery. What about cold? We tend to have cold here.
Yep. Cold does the same thing. If you take a battery and you're introducing it to extreme temperatures, you wait with a battery that might be have started your vehicle just fine. They talked about the prime temperatures for batteries between 50 and 80 degrees.
Oh, okay.
So once you start getting outside of those parameters, that battery has to work extra hard in order to recharge itself. And when you have those extreme dips and, you know, overcharging, undercharging, and you just have those extreme fluctuations, that's where damage to the battery occurs.
So that leads, of course, to the question, you know, thinking about if you have your vehicle, your hybrid vehicle, in a garage, which is heated even to a low temperature, and then you drive out into the cold, but it's been preheated and you have some possible heating that occurs to keep the battery warm, even though you stop places and so on, then you come back and you put it into your garage. What that kind of care for the car would have an effect on its battery life as compared to having your car sit outside as the temperature drops to 20 below zero, and then you crank it up and drive it along, et cetera.
Absolutely. That garage battery is going to have a much longer, much happier life because you've kept the extremes to a minimum is really the best way to explain it. Yes, you know, when you take it outside, it's going to get cold, but as you pointed out, you know, most systems have not only developed a way to keep the battery cool, but also a way to keep the battery warm. You know, so as you're driving along, yes, you are going to experience some dips in temperature, but for the most part, you're really regulating at that point in time the extreme temperature variations that battery is going to experience, which will absolutely extend the longevity of that battery's life.
And it's just in my experience and looking ahead to 2018 and beyond, it seems that almost every manufacturer is increasing the number of hybrids or plug-in hybrids or electric vehicles that they're offering. We've talked in the past about Volvo saying basically all of their models will be either hybrid or electric. And other manufacturers seem to be extending the range of hybrid products across prices and all the rest. So this would seem to be something that's going to be with us increasingly into the future.
You know, we have a lot of European countries, and actually China just came out and announced that by 2025, they will no longer have gasoline-powered engines.
Whoa.
So, you know, we have entire countries that are coming out and saying, you know, by this period of time, we will no longer have vehicles that are run by gasoline. They will either be completely battery-powered or some form of alternative energy in order to propel our vehicles. We are not going to have gasoline-powered vehicles at all. So it's not just manufacturers or our markets that are coming out and really trying to push alternative forms of energy. We have entire countries now that are saying that we will be completely gasoline-less by this time.
So that has got to have an impact upon the aftermarket market as people look to the future. I mean, both in terms of maybe providing, I'm just thinking, a bump in the near term as people continue to use older vehicles, unless it, you know, for whatever reason they need a new one. And then finally, as the transition occurs, fewer and fewer as a proportion of vehicle repairs will be the then older style gasoline and diesel powered vehicles.
That's right. You know, it's changing. It's not going away, but it is absolutely changing. You know, the amount of repairs that can be performed on a vehicle nowadays with just a simple upgrade to software is just astounding. I don't think we'll ever see a world that does not have aftermarket automotive repair shops with replacing parts. Because, I mean, yes, you know, we are doing away with, well, certain areas are doing away with an actual gasoline-powered engine. But, you know, you still have transmissions. You still, to a certain extent, you still have motors. You still, they're electric motors, but they're still motors. You still have steering components, suspension components, braking systems, electrical systems, the filtration systems, you know, all that is still absolutely present on these cars. So we will always have, in one shape or form, aftermarket independent automotive repair shops, because as long as people need transportation, we're always going to need somebody to make the repairs to them when they do break.
Okay. Well, one aspect of this whole business, whether you're a dealer or a repair shop, one sort or another, is, and we've touched upon this a little bit in the past, is maintaining inventory, or more importantly, being able to get inventory as quickly as possible in order to get a vehicle back on the road. Was there any discussion about the improvement in ways in which inventory can get to the right place at the right time?
Not really, no. Just because the logistics of that is so varied across. Because keep in mind that this show was not just for the United States. I mean, we're talking people attended this show from all over the world.
Okay.
So the logistics behind that type of a question, although it's a completely viable one, especially for, you know, us living up here in Alaska, where UPS and FedEx tends not to recognize us as part of the United States. You know, it's a very logical question, but no, one that I did not see addressed pretty much at all while I was down there.
Okay, because that to me seems to be the real question. We know that you can go out and say I'm interested in any particular item. You can do a quick search. You can find very quickly who has it in local. We did a recent search for something in local stores. We were able to determine whether this was available locally or whether it had to be ordered outside of Alaska, and what the variety of prices were and availability in terms of time. You know, that's become kind of a simple and ordinary everyday exercise for someone looking to add a or to find something, whatever item it is. And I'm guessing that the parts department that you have has become very adept at this, and that any changes there, the slight improvements, would be welcomed.
You know, with as easy as it is to find parts online, you know, we have Rock Auto, Amazon, eBay. It's become in lots of dealerships. I will actually have an online parts store. You can go online, search for it. You can look through their dealer-only parts catalogs, look to see what part you need. It'll give you a part number, you know, and then you can call this dealer up and order this part or order it online, whatever you see fit. You know, as it becomes increasingly easy for, you know, a normal person to look these parts up, it is changing how brick-and-mortar stores have to do business. Because the availability as well as pricing is so different. As for me, you know, I have access directly to vendor catalogs. which can make looking up a part either extremely easy or extremely difficult, depending on what I'm looking for. So, you know, the parts question is actually a very complicated one, but I absolutely see that part stores are absolutely going to have to change how they do business and how they supply parts as the automotive technology field changes.
Right, right. It's got to be. I mean, there's a science, an art, you know, keeping all the data, how much, you know, the just-in-time approach, figuring out. I remember when batteries last year became in demand, if you had a surge because of an abrupt change in the temperature and many batteries failed and you had an abnormal number of people coming in wanting batteries, your normal history would not predict that. So I can remember shops, places saying, whoops, we were not set up to do this. We normally don't have that many batteries, so we have to do a quick reorder for
yep.
supply.
Yep. There was lots of parts stores last winter that did run out of batteries because we did experience an abnormal fluctuation in the temperatures. And so, yeah, you're right. They weren't prepared for it because it wasn't something that had existed as far as their historical data, which determines their stocking levels.
Well, let's finish up here with maybe that comment, because we've noticed the temperature has dropped and it appears to be continuing to go down. Just as a last kind of hint, how best to determine your battery is going to fail when the temperature goes down?
Have it tested. Most automotive repair shops will do it for free. You can have it battery tested at NAPA, at O'Reilly's. Part stores will do it. There's lots of places where you can actually have your battery tested. Do not rely upon, you know, whether or not you're having problems starting your vehicle right now.
Okay.
Because if you're already experiencing problems, it's already too late. The battery needs to be replaced.
Okay. And so before the temperature really dips, when we know those kinds of things happen, it might just that might be a good bit of advice. Just swing by if your battery is. How old would you say, 2 or 3 years old, or?
You know, it's not necessarily the age. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into that, including how often you drive the vehicle, whether or not it's stored outside or kept in a heated garage, whether or not the battery is correct for the vehicle. Just because it fits in the tray in the engine compartment does not necessarily mean that it's the correct battery for your vehicle. So, I mean, there's lots of variables that go in there. Really, the best way to do it is just to have it checked out. I've seen some batteries fail that were less than a year old. I've seen some batteries that checked in good health when they were 5 years old. So, really, the best determining factor is just to go by and just have it checked and see where it ranks as far as its charging capacity.
Okay, so before winter really grabs hold of us, each year just regularly just do that check, and then you can be better prepared if you to replace it rather than to be caught somewhere with a dead battery.
Absolutely. That would be a really bad morning.
Okay. Well, any last comments there, Toby, before we finish?
On the topic of batteries and automotive repair, any questions or... You know, if you want to have your battery checked out, come see us at Edmunds Import Auto. We are located next to the Noisy Goose Cafe across the street from the Alaska State Fairgrounds.
Okay. Well, have a good week. Stay warm, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. You too, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to You Oughta Know with Toby Edmunds. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.